Tonight I'd like to talk about mindfulness of feeling. And this is not about emotion in general, but rather about a very basic and fundamental type of feeling that is talked about in the Buddhist tradition, and that is whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. That's sometimes called neutral feeling. So on the night of his enlightenment, the Buddha had a deep insight into what he understood to be the source of the difficulty of our human condition, the suffering or dissatisfaction that we experience, and the nature of that suffering. We all experience suffering. We want things to be different than they are, and when they're not, we get depressed, angry, frustrated. When things are going the way they are, the way we like them to be, we think we finally figured it out, and when things stop going that way, we get depressed, angry, frustrated. So one aspect of the Buddha's insight related to the cause of suffering, which is often translated as craving or wanting. So it's the wanting itself that leads to our suffering, the craving for something to be different than it is. But the insight that the Buddha had into the cause of suffering went beyond a simple statement that craving or wanting causes suffering. He actually discovered a whole chain of causal conditions that lead us through our experience to suffering. I won't cover that whole chain in complete detail, but I would like to just talk a little bit about the section of it that relates to tonight's talk about the feeling. So basically, we have a mind and a body. And because we have a mind and a body, there's sense contact. There are six sense doors talked about in the Buddhist tradition. Those consist of the five normal sense doors of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and what's called the sense door of the mind, where we experience our thoughts and our emotions. So the body and mind lead to this contact or sense impression, and each one of those sense impressions, be it a bodily impression or a mental impression, has one of these feeling tones. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. So, for example, a pain in our knee is unpleasant. The smell of a rose might be pleasant. And a neutral sensation might be something like the sight of pavement beneath our feet, something that we just don't really notice too much. So based on this feeling tone, there's a kind of a very natural movement in the mind to like what's pleasant and want it, or to dislike what's unpleasant and to want to get rid of it. With neutral sensation, we're more likely to not even notice it. So based on the feeling tone, let's just give an example. So eating ice cream is generally pleasant. And we learned probably as a pretty young child that we keep eating ice cream, and then at some point we get really stuffed and it's unpleasant. So we learn to sort of moderate our experience through this movement between pleasant and unpleasant. We're kind of like this automatic machine that tries to maximize the pleasant experience and at the same time minimize the unpleasant experience. So based on that feeling then, we have the wanting. And we usually kind of automatically act on this wanting or not wanting. We don't even really think about it. We just sort of naturally say, okay, once we start wanting something, we think about how we can get it. And we figure out how we can have it or how we can get rid of it. And this process is called clinging. And once an object is clung to, it becomes, there's a kind of an identity that forms around it. It becomes me or mine. This could take a kind of an obvious form, such as, this is my cup. Or it might be a little more subtle, like, I'm the kind of person who likes to hike in the woods. In terms of this chain of causal conditioning that I'm talking about, this is called becoming. We like becoming. Some part of us really likes feeling like we know who we are and how we're defined. And this might take a feeling of a subtle form of feeling of control or feeling like we know something. But we like this feeling of becoming. When we crystallize ourselves around something, there's a brief experience of satisfaction. Ah, this is it. I have it now. But from here, according to the Buddha, suffering and dissatisfaction inevitably result. This might result from the very sort of obvious separation or separation from what we considered mine. So if I break my favorite mug, there may be a reaction of sadness. The mug that I had that was mine is now no longer mine. Or we might experience the grief at the breakup of a relationship or the loss of a loved one. But suffering can also result from the very simple fact that the moment of satisfaction we get when we get something and feel good about that, that moment of satisfaction is impermanent. It disappears. And once it has disappeared, we want to have another one of those moments. So we're off again on this cycle. So to just review this cycle, based on our body and mind, there's sense contact. Each one of those sense contacts has a feeling. Feeling, usually that feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, leads to a liking and a wanting, or a disliking and not wanting. That leads to a clinging, which leads to that becoming, that identification, which is where the Buddha says we head into suffering. So while the Buddha saw and realized how this chain operates in our lives over and over again, in a very rapid basis in our lives, he also saw that this chain has some weak links, that they don't naturally have to follow one on the heels of the other. And that attention and mindfulness to some of the links in particular can really help us to break that chain that leads us right into suffering. And one of those weak links is between feeling and craving. This is the movement of the mind from pleasant to wanting, from unpleasant to wanting to get rid of, from neutral to not noticing, or we might say not wanting to notice. If we bring mindfulness to the feeling tone of our experience, it's actually possible to short-circuit the usual movement of the mind from that pleasant to liking to wanting. It's actually possible to experience something as pleasant without wanting it. It's possible to experience something as unpleasant without wanting to get rid of it. But the only way this can happen is when we actually begin to see the feeling tone itself, so that we don't automatically spring from that feeling tone, leap off of it into our reactivity the way we normally do. Usually this actual experience of pleasant or unpleasant doesn't really register much on us consciously. We're so quick to just try to figure out, how do I get more of this? Or how do I get rid of this? The Buddha described mindfulness of feeling most prominently in a sutta on the four foundations of mindfulness, the Satipatthana Sutta. And the four foundations of mindfulness are body, feeling, attending to the mind, and attending to the objects of mind. And in the normal meditation that we often do and teach here, we focus a lot on the body, on attending to the body, and on attending to the mind. So the body would be all the sense impressions that we get, and the mind would be paying attention to our emotions and our thoughts. But the feeling tone of the experience, the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience, the Buddha saw was so crucial that it's a foundation of mindfulness all its own. And the instructions that he gave for this are really quite simple. In the sutta, they go something like, when a meditator experiences something pleasant, he knows it's pleasant. When a meditator experiences something unpleasant, she knows it's unpleasant. Likewise for neutral. So mindfulness of feeling is that simple. When the experience is pleasant, know that it's pleasant. When it's unpleasant, know that it's unpleasant. It's simple, but it's not really that easy. Because first we really need to get a sense of what this feeling tone is, actually feel it in the body and know it in the mind very directly. So as I said earlier, if we experience something pleasant, we usually move pretty quickly into from the pleasant feeling into thoughts about it. So initially those thoughts might be something about how much we like it. And then they probably move quickly into plans about how to get more of it. And soon we start acting on those thoughts. So stopping the usual momentum of the mind from spinning away from the feeling itself into the thoughts about it and the actions about it is not easy. But it's helped immensely by having an appreciation or a respect for the value of looking at the feeling tone and knowing that it's really worth paying attention to. So this feeling tone can be pretty subtle, but it's actually pretty obvious when you start to look at it. If you bump your head, you pretty much know it's unpleasant, but probably there's some reactivity there that's more predominant than the actual unpleasant experience. When you eat something that you like, there's a sense of knowing that it's pleasant, but again, there's kind of this mental activity that overlays that pleasant feeling, and it obscures it. So it's hard to stop just at feeling the pleasant and unpleasant. We aren't really trained to see things there. What we're trained to do is to react to them, to react to those feelings. So when you start actually seeing the feeling tone and how the mind responds to it, you really begin to see really deeply into the way the mind functions. So I'd like to do a short guided meditation now to kind of point you at this feeling tone. So that just to hopefully give you a sense of what I'm talking about. So we'll sit for a couple minutes, and then I'm going to make some suggestions of things for you to attend to pay attention to. So we'll start with about 3 or 4 minutes of silence. What is the most obvious sensation in your experience? Let the mind rest with that sensation for a few moments. Is the sensation pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? As you observe that feeling, does it get stronger, weaker, or stay the same? For the next few minutes, I'm going to suggest a series of body parts, of parts of the body for you to turn your attention to. Each time I name a part of the body, let your attention rest in that area, noticing what you feel there and seeing what the feeling tone is in that area. Again, notice what happens to the feeling as you observe it. So notice the contact of your buttocks with the cushion or the chair. Your knees. Your shoulders. Your jaw. The area around your eyes. Your cheeks. The backs of your hands. Now see if you can let the attention roam randomly through the body. Let it float as freely as possible. Explore the sensations of the head, the shoulders, the arms, the trunk, the hips, the legs, the feet. Every few seconds, let the attention land on some bodily sensation and see if you can notice whether the sensation is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. See if you can find a pleasant sensation in your body and let the mind rest there for a few moments. See if you can find an unpleasant sensation in your body and let the mind rest there for a few moments. Now pick some part of your body that's outside of your awareness that you haven't been paying attention to, and let the attention rest there for a few moments. Now I'm going to ask you to imagine some things. Try to simply rest with the idea suggested rather than letting the mind proliferate on the idea. See if this calls up a feeling tone for you. Imagine yourself relaxing on a beach on a warm, sunny day. Imagine the sound of fingernails on a blackboard. Imagine yourself in your place of work. Imagine looking into a cloudless sky. Now let the corners of your mouth turn up a little bit in a half smile. What's the feeling around your mouth as you do this? Did anybody have any reactions or comments to anything in the guided meditation? When I suggested that you let your attention roam kind of randomly through your body, did anyone notice whether the sensations were predominantly pleasant or unpleasant? Did anybody have the experience of noticing more unpleasant or more pleasant sensations? No.
More unpleasant or louder, they're more noticeable in terms of volume.
Right.
Pleasant.
Anybody else have that experience? Anybody have the experience that the pleasant sensations were more predominant? Did the things I suggest you imagine, the lying on the beach or the fingernails across the blackboard, did any of that call up a feeling for you? Were there responses to those things? So, did you notice whether it was the thing that I asked you to imagine itself that caused that feeling, or was it a reaction? Did you notice a distinction between the imagining of something and the reaction to it? That's a little harder to get to sometimes. Right. That's a reaction. That's probably unpleasant. Your teeth hurt. I get this kind of, you know, this feeling, a funny feeling on my nails themselves, as if I was imagining I was doing it. You know, it's, and that's an unpleasant feeling that comes in the nails. So normally in mindfulness meditation, we wouldn't be calling up images the way I suggested you to do. But I wanted to do that to point out to you that not only physical sensations will call up feeling tone. So mental events also have feeling tone. Emotions have a feeling tone. Anger is usually unpleasant. Resistance is usually unpleasant. Happiness is usually pleasant. Thoughts themselves even have a subtle feeling tone. But more often, what happens is that we react to a thought, and that reaction has a feeling tone. And that's probably more likely what you experienced when I asked you to call up the images. But actually, this kind of reactivity underlies the belief that certain physical sensations are unpleasant or pleasant also. So, for example, one night recently I was having trouble sleeping in the middle of the night. And so I got up to meditate. And partway through the meditation, there began to be this kind of random tapping noise, occasional random tapping noise. And to me, it felt like a very unpleasant sensation. But as I just kept paying attention, I noticed that as the tapping noise began, there was a contraction in the body. And that contraction was unpleasant. And as I continued paying attention, I noticed that there was a slight, very subtle fear that arose when the tapping noise began. And that fear was absolutely unpleasant. That was really the unpleasant part of it. And when I rested with the feeling of fear, when the sound came back, I realized that the sound itself really wasn't unpleasant. It actually had a kind of slightly pleasant quality to it. So it was the reactivity of the fear that made me think that the sound itself was unpleasant at first. And that kind of thing can be kind of fun to play with, like with the sound of the telephone, for example, you know. Is it really the sound itself that's unpleasant, or is it a reaction? Oh, I wish they didn't have the phone turned on. Or it's fun to play with that in meditation. If somebody walks in late and you hear the sound of them walking, there can be a reaction to that. So is it the reaction that's unpleasant? Yes, I've heard this story.
And so every time they would sit down to meditate, the wah would go off, and they were all flustered and thought, hey, we're going to have to find a new place. And then he said, why don't we channel that energy into our Kundalini spirit? So like when the, because it was so loud, and when the engines would go off, they would just let it travel through their body. And I thought that same thing. It's not the sound, it's your reaction.
Exactly. And the reaction has a feeling tone also. That reaction has the feeling tone of, oh, that's unpleasant. So the fact that all experience, everything we experience, our physical sensations, our mental sensations, our reactions, everything has a feeling tone. It helps to explain why it's actually so hard to break out of that cycle I talked about earlier, that cycle, that chain from the contact to the feeling, to the wanting, to the clinging, to the becoming, to the suffering. If we pay attention to the what we feel in those links themselves, we find that if we feel wanting in our bodies, wanting is very unpleasant. Something feels off. Something feels wrong when there's the wanting. It feels like a deep sense of being dissatisfied. Something is not right in the world. And in our usual state of mind, that feeling of becoming, where we have something and, yes, that's pleasant. That feeling of having that thing is pleasant. So we learn pretty early in our lives that getting what we want gives us a double hit of getting rid of something unpleasant. The wanting itself goes away. And when we get rid of something unpleasant, there's a little hit of pleasant as well. But we also get the hit of having something we like. So it's a very strongly conditioned reaction through that. We believe that having what we want is the way to go because of that conditioning of reduces the unpleasant and maximizes the pleasant. So the cycle reinforces itself. But it is possible to break it. It's not hopeless. So one sutta says that all things converge on feeling. And this, I think, the wording of this is really calls our attention to just how crucial the feeling, paying attention to that feeling tone is. We experience such a wide variety of sense impressions, our sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and a never-ending stream of thoughts and moods. And every one of those experiences has a feeling tone to it. We think that we react to the sense impression itself. We think, I like blue, or I don't like the way hot roofing tar smells, or I like feeling happy, or I don't like it when my partner says that to me. But for some of us, blue is pleasant, and we like that pleasant. For some of us, hot roofing tar is unpleasant. Being happy is pleasant. The example of the not liking what a partner says is a little more complex, but it might unfold something like this, that when your partner speaks to you, there's the hearing, and there's a tone of voice, depending on what tone of voice the your partner is speaking in, that hearing itself has a feeling tone. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. But then there's also an idea that's born in the mind about what your partner has said. And that's probably what is unpleasant and what you're reacting to. So from our wide variety of sense impressions, our reaction to those impressions comes down to whether something is pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. It's like this springboard where we hit that pleasant or unpleasant and just ricochet off of it into wanting or not wanting. It's really just this, it's like being on a springboard. So attending to the feeling helps us to learn to see that reactivity as it arises. So all things converge on feeling. I'd like to talk about a couple ways to practice with mindfulness of feeling. So becoming attuned to the feeling tone of experience can take some time. And probably the easiest place to feel it is in the bodily sensations, particularly the sense of touch. The body, the touch sensations are very finely attuned to something, whether something is pleasant or unpleasant. And in fact, you know, sometimes if you touch, the body will almost automatically react if you touch a hot pan, almost before you're even conscious of the hot, the body will let go of it. So the body is very keenly tuned to pleasant and unpleasant. It's at a pretty easy place to start to look at it. So you can just simply explore the experience of pleasant and unpleasant in your daily life. Pick something that you do a lot of, brushing your teeth or washing dishes, and see if you can notice when the experience is pleasant and when it is unpleasant. So if the dishwashing, there's probably a flow of changing experiences of pleasant and unpleasant. When you first put your hands in the warm water, there's probably a pleasant feeling if it's not too hot. But maybe when you're grasping the dish to hold it so that you can clean it, there may be an unpleasant feeling in the hand of tightness and tension. So there's a kind of a never-ending stream of these pleasant and unpleasant sensations. In one commentary to the suttas, the Visuddhimagga, it actually says that the touch sensations can be pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, but that all the other physical sensations, sight, sound, smell, and taste, are actually neutral, and that any sense that they're pleasant or unpleasant is born out of conditions and a kind of a reactivity to them. Now, I don't know that I completely believe this, especially, you know, when I think about my reaction to certain tastes. If I get a food in my mouth that is spoiled, it's unpleasant, and I kind of feel like the body is telling me, don't eat this thing, this is not good for you. So I don't know that I really believe what this commentary says, but I think it's a very interesting exploration to look at, is what I sense as unpleasant a pile of dog excrement on the ground with flies all over it. Is the sight itself actually unpleasant, or is it a reaction? Is it a concept of what it represents that's unpleasant? So it's just an interesting experience, you know, looking at a rose. Is it really the rose, the sight itself that's pleasant, or is it a whole set of emotions and memories that it brings up that are pleasant? So it's just a very interesting exploration, I think, to take that commentary and just experiment with it. And there is also, it can begin to become clear that the feeling tone itself is dependent on conditions. I had one experience on a retreat. It was a 3-month retreat at IMS, and I was having dinner, a very light meal at dinner at the retreat there. And I had a little bit of bean dip in an apple and some chips. And I took my first bite of bean dip, and you know, the sense of the the feeling of it across the tongue, the kind of texture of the bean dip across the tongue, and a little bit of bitterness and tanginess to the bean dip. And then after swallowing that, I took a bite of the apple. And the apple, the combination of the burst of liquid across the tongue with the tartness and the sweetness, it was so pleasant. It was just delightful. There were just these bubbles of delight running through the body experiencing this apple. And this was great. You know, I took another bite of the apple. And it wasn't quite as pleasant. That second bite wasn't quite as pleasant. And I suspected, oh, you know, maybe it's the bean dip, the contrast. And so I took another bite of the bean dip and another bite of the apple. And there was a little bit more that hit of that pleasant. But then as I continued the eating over the time, the pleasant, the kind of intensity of that hit of pleasant diminished over the course of the 15 or 20 minutes as I ate the meal. So that very same object, the apple, it was the same apple that I was eating, had different feeling tones throughout the meal because of the conditions surrounding the experience. So the feeling tones are often actually determined by conditions. So you may experience something as pleasant one day, the very same thing may be unpleasant the next day. An excellent place to actually observe the feeling tone is when we're eating. And eating is one of those places where all of our senses are engaged. We see the food in front of us. We smell the blending of the aromas. We taste the food and the touch of the food on the tongue. And we have the sounds of chewing and swallowing and the thoughts about the food, what we like, what we don't like, what we want more of. So it's a really interesting place to explore mindfulness in general, but feeling in particular. And if the meal is a pleasant one, and it's actually, I'd say, best to pick a pleasant meal to start this exploration, it can be a lot of fun to observe how the pleasant and unpleasant aspects play out. Another good place to look at the feeling tone is when strong emotion is present. Just see if you can recognize how the emotion feels in the body. What does anger feel like? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Excitement, lust, grief, sadness, what do they feel like? You might be surprised, actually, the feeling tone that underlies some of these experiences. I found excitement sometimes can be very pleasant. It's kind of an uplifting feeling. And other times it can be unpleasant because the body feels so agitated. There's a kind of an agitation in the excitement. So again, it depends on where the mind is, how the feeling tone might be experienced for some of these emotions. In a Dharma talk I heard on one retreat, Carol Wilson said, if you're experiencing aversion, there's something unpleasant in your experience. And on this particular retreat, I was experiencing a lot of aversion, particularly during walking meditation. As I was doing the walking meditation, as somebody would walk near me, there would be tremendous aversion about this person and why were they walking so close or whatever. You know, it's just incredible amount of aversion. I was experiencing aversion when I saw a pair of shoes on the other side of the room. So I really began looking closely at the feeling tone. What is it that's unpleasant in my experience that I'm experiencing all this aversion? And in one walking meditation, things were going fine. I was walking back and forth and then somebody came up and started walking right next to me. And instant aversion again. And I just thought, okay, there's the aversion. Let's see if I can see what's unpleasant in this experience. And I started with the bodily sensations. You know, is there anything in the sight? You know, there wasn't a particular touch, you know, that this person wasn't coming in contact with me. But there wasn't anything particular about the way this person looked that was unpleasant. There was one little gesture they made that I noticed that there was a contraction in my body over, but it wasn't really, I didn't seem to be where the reactivity was coming from. So I couldn't find anything in the bodily experience that was really unpleasant. So I figured, well, there must be something in the mind. It's got to be somewhere. So I started attending to the thoughts. And Joseph Goldstein likes to talk about, you know, playing with thoughts and seeing just if you can watch thoughts. He calls it the thought game. And so I started doing that as I was doing the walking meditation. And as you do that kind of a game where you try to see your thoughts, often they kind of disappear for a while. So it was a few more walking back and forth, and I didn't see many thoughts. And then suddenly this thought appears in my mind. And the thought was, he's weird. And I thought, okay, there's a thought. And clearly there was some aversion around that thought. But I didn't really see why I thought this person was weird. And then look, a few more walking back and forth. And this other, like, exploding thought in the mind. He's in bare feet and it's freezing cold outside. And, you know, I nearly burst into laughter at this point because I saw that the mind had constructed from this idea that it was too cold to be walking in bare feet, that this person was weird, and that I was reacting to that. So the reactivity had to do with the thoughts itself. I had created something in the mind that was unpleasant, and the mind was reacting to it. As soon as I saw this, the whole edifice of a belief about this person, that this person was weird and I needed to protect myself and defend myself, it all just crumbled. And in the next walking path, I was spontaneously doing metta for this person. So it was very striking for me. So another suggestion is to pay attention when there's reactivity, either aversion or desire, and see if you can find something. For me, I tend to focus on the unpleasant. I'm what they call an aversive type, which means that if there's something unpleasant in experience, the mind goes right to it. The greedy types, or the ones who tend to go for what they like, they tend to hone in on the pleasant sensations. So I really tend to go for the unpleasant, and reactivity for me in looking at aversion is a good place. But if you tend to be the type that really wants a lot of things and are frustrated by wanting, then look and see if you can find what's pleasant that you're in your experience that you're wanting. It's also interesting to look at the experience of neutral, although this is a lot harder to see. But one place you can start thinking about it or exploring it maybe is if there's boredom. Often if there's nothing in our experience that we're crystallizing about wanting or not wanting, the mind gets bored. There's just kind of a neutral experience, and the mind gets bored with that pretty easily. So that's one place to start to look at it. But I also want to give you a description of one of my own experiences, or a few of my own experiences with neutral that I had in a recent retreat, that really made me see so clearly just how much reactivity can be born out of neutral. So on this particular retreat, I was spending a lot of time in this place of neutral feeling, and at times, the mind rested quite comfortably in that neutral feeling. But I also started to observe that it would kind of slip off into boredom or indifference. So those experiences of boredom and indifference, they were unpleasant. So I could see that the neutral, it was kind of hard for the mind to just rest in neutral. It kind of wanted to move to something, in my case, to something unpleasant. But on the same retreat, there were times when I was experiencing neutral sensation for very long periods of time, and I could just see the mind starting to lean into the neutral experience with a subtle sense of waiting for something to happen. And sometimes I could just feel the waiting, and in that case, if I could just feel the waiting, it would usually go away. But other times the waiting kind of slipped by unnoticed. And when that happened, there would be a few moments more go by and nothing happened. And there would be a reaction that I was waiting for something and it didn't happen. And that reaction would be, you failed. And this pattern in the mind, in my mind, is one of my most habitual patterns. And that you failed thought is a springboard for me to go to self-hatred and unworthiness, feelings of self-hatred and unworthiness. I was being quite mindful here, and I noticed the thought, you're a failure, arise. I saw that it had arisen out of the subtle sense of waiting, and that the waiting came out of neutral. But I could see how much reactivity. I could go from neutral sensation to self-hatred in a few seconds because of a reaction to that neutral sensation. So as you become familiar with feeling tone, you start to see it more naturally in your experience as opposed to having to look at it like I've been suggesting that you do. And then you can start to practice true mindfulness of feeling, just noticing when the feeling arises and knowing it, noticing when it's pleasant and knowing that it's pleasant, noticing when it's unpleasant and knowing that it's unpleasant. So the last thing I'll say about feeling is that it can kind of have a yin-yang quality to it, that in the pleasant are the seeds of the unpleasant, and in the unpleasant are the seeds of the pleasant. So when something pleasant ends, it's unpleasant. And when something unpleasant ends, there's a moment of pleasant. The way neutral fits into this picture is kind of interesting, actually, and there's a sutta that describes this yin-yang nature of experience. And I'd like to read this section to you. This is a sutta in which a lay man is talking to a nun, and the lay man is asking for instruction from this nun, and this nun actually happens to be his ex-wife, but they're still friends, so they're having this conversation. So he asks, what is pleasant and what is painful with regard to pleasant feeling? What is painful and what is pleasant with regard to painful feeling? What is pleasant and what is painful with regard to neither pleasant nor painful feeling? And she responds, friend, pleasant feeling is pleasant when it persists and painful when it changes. Painful feeling is painful when it persists and pleasant when it changes. Neither painful nor pleasant feeling is pleasant when there is knowledge of it and painful when there is no knowledge of it. So those are my thoughts on feeling. And if anybody has any comments or questions, so yeah.
One of the philosophies that pleasant and unpleasant creates a reaction. And at that moment, in place of reaction, you do the rewind. There's a fork.
So yes.
Either you can go towards the reaction or you can go towards the realization of anicca.
Yes.
And that probably is one solution.
Yes. Yeah, if you can see that the experience is pleasant and that there is about to be a reaction born, you can rest just with the feeling of pleasant and see that it is impermanent. It goes away. And after it goes away, there's no more reactivity. Yeah, so the impermanent quality of looking at those is quite helpful also.
That creates that removes the sankhara. If you react, then it creates a sankhara.
Yes.
Kind of
that's right.
And if you realize that it doesn't become a sankhara.
That's right.
But what you are saying, that all the very deep, going into the more different aspect, which is even better.
Oh, I'm sorry, what do you mean?
What I mean is that what you did is that you're looking at microscopically at what's going on inside.
Yes.
So, which is going on. So, the more you see, that it leads us to mindfulness.
Yes.
So that is why it is a new thing for me, but the way you presented. The way I was exposed to is that any sensation and feeling comes, just realize it's impermanent.
I see.
But now you have gone into the different aspect which is happening inside. So that's good to have that, that's good to look at it. And that will lead us to mindfulness.
Yes.
That's very good.
Yeah, what I find is most helpful in terms of leading us to mindfulness is to find an exploration that's interesting to us. And for me, exploring this feeling tone has been very interesting. So it's really helped to support the development of mindfulness. So it does. Just looking at the chain of reactions, it helps to develop the mindfulness. Yeah.
About the neutral state, like I was thinking, when trauma victims, they often create a mental space where they totally shut off. I guess they call that dissociation. And so there's something else that can happen in the neutral state, which is it can shift suddenly from, you know, increasing awareness to what happened in the trauma, because you just totally block out everything. One of the things that a psychologist will do when somebody who's been in that state is they'll have them take like a shower head, because they have no body sensation.
I see.
Mm-hmm. They're numb. They don't taste the apple. There's a total inability to really sense. And it's a safety mechanism. But to break through that, so that's another neutral, I don't know, would you call that neutral? I don't know.
I think in terms of, you know, the experience of the person, if there's no sensation in the body, that would be a neutral experience, except there's probably reactivity in the mind about the fact there's no sensation in the body that would be, you know, unpleasant for them. So, you know, it depends on where they're actually looking, but I think that kind of shutting off Well, it's a very natural defense mechanism, I think, and...
But to become aware that you have gone to that state.
Yeah.
That's possibly an opening.
It could be.
Because what they do is they take a shower head and go around the body trying to sort of break through.
Oh, to find a place where they can feel something. Yeah.
And often people just crack open when that happens.
Wow.
So, I find that happens for me sometimes in my practice. I'll be sitting there, and all of a sudden, I am just crying my eyes out. And I wasn't even sure what was happening, and then I'll have, some realization.
Yeah, I think that neutral space is very powerful in terms of, you know, letting the mind be kind of open to something that arises. Like, in my situation, what arose was that feeling of you're a failure. And, you know, this was this retreat I described, it was the first time that I had actually seen the birth of those feelings of self-hatred. And it was quite eye-opening to see that it came out of nothing. You know, so in that state of kind of quiet meditation, many things can be born out of that neutral space, and that seeing the reactivity, getting as close as you can to the source of it, is very freeing. Anything else? Yeah.
I was kind of amazed that the last thing he asked us to do was to make a half smile. And what that did for me. I mean, just the change in my face, the feeling of gravity on these muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And a sense of ease and some internal good feelings that I can't exactly put my finger on that makes me want to remember smiling more often.
Yeah, Thich Nhat Hanh recommends that. Put a little half smile on your face. And it's also a technique that's used in some of the concentration practices. Because what you do in some of the concentration practices is once you've gotten the mind settled, you let the mind rest on a pleasant sensation. And if you've got a little half smile on your face, there's usually a little bit of pleasant sensation there. So it's a kind of a trick.
Yeah.
So thank you all for being here and listening to the Dharma.